Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border, back with another episode of news. So, about the front lines. Well, surprisingly enough, there are some very tiny news. If you consider Bakhmut, then in the north part of town, the Russian forces have moved forward by about 100 meters, and in the south of Bakhmut, we're talking about 75 meters. Those are the biggest achievements because Ukrainians have retreated from the private sector literally two blocks away to their better reinforced trenches. That's about the Russian successes on the front line. In the other news, there is another, well, second Makiyevka basically happening, as apparently in the town of Kirillovka, some Russian soldiers, mobilized ones, were placed together in a schoolhouse. And some of them managed to publish, well, those who hadn't had their phones taken away from them, had managed to publish a nice little photo about them, you know, taking the local school's skeleton, you know, the one they use in anatomy lessons and biology and stuff like that, and taking some selfies with it. Namely, one, specifically a Buryat soldier, and if you look up that image, he's sitting there with a helmet with a nice little V on top of his head with one of those, you know, black and orange bands as well. And of course, well, you know, it's been bombed. Now that apparently happened in like very late January or something, maybe a bit thereabouts. But the problem is that we only now got actually confirmation about the school's location and where the missiles were actually striking and all this stuff. We haven't seen any kind of epiphanies or any people writing, you know, all the articles about the dead and stuff. So still, the exact casualties are not known, but we're talking about 100 people here. I'm talking about casualties. Well, again, as the front has been somewhat quiet, as everyone's talking about counterattacks on both sides, there have been a lot of conflict, a lot of discussion. And recently, on the Western news, the kind of new analysis of the casualties are there. And currently, Western sources report that it's about 200,000 Russians in casualties. And if you calculate, you know, that in the war, casualties are not only dead, but also the wounded, and if you take that, the situation would be like 1 to 3, so approximately 25% of those 200,000 are dead, so it's about 50,000. And this is probably the first time ever when my Russian sources state that in this specific case, Western analysts have been extremely conservative about their numbers, since, again, it's a bit of a mess about how Russia even manages to collect themselves together and talk about these casualties, since there's not only Wagner, there are multiple battalions, then there's like the still in unincorporated Luhansk Donetsk People's Republic troops. It's a mess. There's also Rosgvardi and Kadyrovtsi and all these people. And these numbers could probably be only for the Russian soldiers, out of which, well, you know, if you're actively serving in the Russian army as a person who's under that command, there's a lot of things going on there. Today, one of the journalists that I watch, Maxim Katz, I've mentioned him on this show previously, he also stated that, you know, these casualties are just going to go. And as he views it, I'm not sure if I agree with this completely, but it was an interesting view that he posted that Putin's probably going to continue this war just so he wouldn't lose in it. And not in the sense that he can win the war. No. It's kind of like, well, using Maxim's analogy here, it's kind of like, you know, if you lose in a football game 150-0, you still haven't lost the game until the final whistle is blown. And although Russia can't, with its current abilities, win this war anymore, what they can do is try to extend this as much as possible. And again, he's very pro-Ukrainian, and well, I kind of have to agree with him on the part that this war is going to go on for as long as the West finally decides to deliver some heavy weaponry to Ukraine, because Putin's probably going to drag this one out. However, well, as Katz again said, this war can go on forever only if Putin is in power. And this is the main subject of today's episode, since we've seen more conflicts. I reported previously on the conflict between Yevgeny Prigozhin and my best nemesis/buddy/comrade/I wish he would, you know, go to Hague, Igor Girkin. And this has continued, but not in the sense that you'd expect. See, right now, there's a massive brewing conflict between the supporters of the war. Recently, one of the more high-ranking members of Yedinaya Russia, United Russia, Putin's party, came out and he was on a talk show in Russian TV, and he stated very publicly and openly that Russia, like their party, which obviously are the best and the brightest and Putin's, I don't know, god, king of men or whatever, but that their party is not afraid of liberals because they've all left. There's none of them left in Russia. They're not worried about turbo patriots. That's their new term, turbo patriots. It's kind of like, you know, watching Nazis fight with hardcore Stalinists, and they're both racist, and they're both, you know, want to conquer you, but it's still interesting to look how they're slowly breaking apart, because this isn't some sort of minor squabble. This is something which is driving this whole Russian situation in their own political sphere to the ground, since he stated that these turbo patriots, they'll try to make an ultra-patriotic Maidan, because Maidan is obviously anything that these guys could pull off, but just bear with me, okay? So he stated that they will use this corruption card, although this, you know, is just a mirage, because obviously Russia has no corruption, United Russia Party is great and whatever. The problem is that I do, as well as anyone else who follows Russia, that there's a terrible, ridiculous amount of corruption in Russia. Like, it's just an undeniable fact. And, well, these turbo patriots from the Girkin side, they viewed it as a personal attack, and they responded. But they, of course, you know, in this speech, this United Russia representative, he managed to state that, you know, next time some sort of Izium happens, or something like that, they're going to be on the streets and yelling that everything's bad in Russia. The problem is everything is really bad in Russia. And these guys, turbo patriots, these are the same people who yelled that Ukraine was Nazis and all that stuff, and they were also super angry with the fact that apparently Israel's prime minister has spoken with Putin and that Putin has promised not to kill Zelensky. They had many reasons to be especially angry about. And they took it to heart. They basically published that, you know, instead of just critiquing some, giving some legitimate criticisms to this Yedinaya Russia representative, they also stated that, you know, how dare you laugh about this, like, those Russian people who were killed by evil ukrops and all that. It's all nonsense, obviously, you know, they, both sides here, A, blatantly lie, B, just quote whatever they think about the other side, and they're just basically, you're looking at Nazis versus Stalinists throwing horse poop at each other, and it's just ridiculous. And the interesting fact is that, you know, both sides are, well, very on the edge right now, because at the beginning of the war, there was a soldier, I really can't look up his name right now. It was here somewhere. But there was this one of these soldiers from these ultra-patriotic side who was, like, standing there. It's somewhere in one of my earlier episodes, how he was literally picking up a skull from one of the Mariupol defenders of Azov, and just, you know, talking about how all Ukrainians should die, how they're all evil and all that whatnot. Like, totally talking about all that nonsense. Well, now he's been shot in the head from the back with a pistol, and is in a critical condition in a hospital. Probably dead at this point already, I think, because the pictures I've seen, yeah, I don't know. Even if he kind of manages to get back on his feet somehow and survive, that man's going to be a vegetable for life, basically. There's no going back from that. And that kind of made the whole thing of these turbo-patriotic Russians, as they call themselves, but, you know, not even Russian opposition, liberal ones, or not even people who are just mildly pro-Putin call them actual patriots. Yeah, well, they got angry because this was one of their representatives. And again, Putin has been doing some dealings. Because, weird as it may seem, yeah, it's kind of like in the French Revolution, main threats to Putin come from the right. And Putin can't really solve this issue because, on the one side, and this comes from analysis of Russian journalists, on one hand, he could, like, smack this turbo right opposition, but then he would have to do that openly, because, you know, any hidden punishments wouldn't work. He can't really intimidate them because they have no utter respect for Putin. But if he does that openly, he has to reveal their views, and they say a lot of things that Navalny would agree even with them, about corruption and about how Russia is ineffective, and the fact that they're murderous ogres who want to kill all Ukrainians. That's a whole other story, because they totally are, but they have some legitimate criticisms. So now, you know, it's another thing that's brewing inside in this whole cesspool that is currently, well, this whole war and Russia's eternal issues. It truly looks like, you know, although both sides here, they want to stay and make Russia strong and all this stuff, what they're doing is that seems that they're breaking it apart from the inside. Again, there is no kind of monopoly on violence around this time, and it's getting a bit sad and creepy about this whole war thing. Because Russia isn't making any advances since, well, you know, in the early days of the war, they were sending in undermanned tanks and armored fighting vehicles and all that stuff because they wanted to show, for their own propaganda reasons in their own country, like, columns of tanks going when they didn't have any manpower. Then those tanks were blown up, and now they kind of have the manpower, but they no longer have the tanks or ammo to run them. So that also drives them down, and it's, let's just say, not a good situation right now to be on the front there. And again, Moore, as I've talked about him previously, he's also one of those turbo patriots, but he's answered to this question because, well, he wrote about how the situation is actually going and how people react to this potential counter-operation from Russia's side. And I'll quote him. This is my translation. War translated is more focused on Arestovich. Also, I've picked up some translating work on my own. And I'll quote here. They write to me a lot, saying that in the camp of Kiev, there's also a huge fatigue from losses, from lack of equipment, and so on. That Prigozhin skillfully trolls the Bandera movement by calling them weak. Like, ha ha, don't even attempt to hold Bakhmut Artemovsk, you won't do it. And then, apparently, in response to this, Ukrainians throw more and more troops in the furnace. And there are rumors that they're dying in huge numbers, and soon the front of the armed forces of Ukraine will fall apart. And then Murs writes, I would be glad to be mistaken in my considerations, but I do not really count on it. If the armed forces of Ukraine are decomposing, then mass disobedience and riots of units should begin. While, well, this is not happening. And the Bakhmut meat grinder works in both directions. It's hard to come up with something worse at the moment than what people call Prigozhin's brilliant trolling. Anyone who has access to information about the losses of the Luhansk and Donetsk People's Republic's corps in recent months will tell you this. While Prigozhin's mercenaries are storming Artemovsk, everyone who knows anything understands perfectly well what a terrible bloody price the absence of serious, the absence of our support and serious Ukrainian counterattacks was basically brought here. This price on the entire the front from Marinka to Kremennaya is paid by brigades and regiments of the LDPR and DPR battalions, in which, in addition to the mobiks, only often the leadership of some battalions, regiments, and brigades, oh, and few artillerymen have remained. The infantry in these companies has already changed their composition a couple of times at least in this year. And some were already the fourth complete, you know, manpower squad is fighting. Serviceable armor is a rarity. For the next attacks and assaults, the armor is collected, as they call it, from the pine forest. Just like the engineers who are supposed to repair it and gunners operators on it. And the so-called stormtroopers themselves often do not know how to shoot normally from personal weapons or use group and assault weapons. They're not really taught because the regiments and brigades of the People's Republics from the beginning of the special military operation were not withdrawn for normal replenishment and retraining, unlike the Russians. They have no armor, no communication, no normal artillery support, and they die. And they're ordered to go forward, and they die, for no significant results. And they are being replaced by Russian mobilized, which you can't really spend as much as the Donbas people. And these mobilized, you know, they don't really want to die themselves. And then I have to take out a checklist and start checking. Are there conditions for the success of an offensive by the Russian Federation armed forces, so that it does not choke in blood in the fortified areas of Donbas, which took 8 years to build? The Russian Federation cannot win, and this is, by the way, super patriots talking here. Yeah? This is, again, those people who hate Putin, not for being an evil dictator, but hate Putin for not being successful in the war. So, you know, this is what it is. Carrying on. The Russian Federation cannot win as long as in its rear there is a state machinery of government that has been eaten away by corruption and incompetence, while the economy is run by systemic liberals like Siluanov and Nabiulin. Siluanov is for working with Sberbank and the Great Central, and Nabiulin is like central bank stuff. A and professional reformers, who are even these people? Has a special military operation been carried out to get rid of all this? Nope. The rear remains rotten. Those who have brought the Russian Federation to a positional bloody swamp remain at the helm. Please draw your own conclusions. Obviously, Putin and his cronies up there, they don't like it. They don't like it a lot. This is one of the reasons why the conflict is still brewing. But still, facts are facts. Carrying on once again. Victory requires that the enemy be decapitated, deprived of communication and control of the propaganda machine. Are these conditions met? No. Zelensky was promised immunity. The ministries and headquarters in Kyiv are intact. Television and radio broadcasting and internet providers have not been destroyed. Even the control room of the Ukrainian railways is intact. For the successes of the Russian armed forces, there must be destruction of the enemy's opportunities to bring fuel, weapons, ammunition, and food reinforcements to the front. The theater area must be sealed from the air and by long-range weapons. The enemy must lose bridges and viaducts, tunnels, and the most important depots, including those where wheelsets are changed from Eurotrack to Russian. So it is necessary to stop the flow of Western weapons and ammunition to Kyiv, at the same time sealing the ports of Odessa. Is this condition fulfilled? No. The destruction of transformers and deprivation of electricity in the cities of the former Ukrainian SSR punished only the civilian population and did not solve the main problems. Before a ground offensive, an air offensive operation should be carried out, with the suppression of enemy air defense at its beginning, as part of a ground air operation. Is this expected to be happening? According to my observations, the Russian Air Force crisis has not been overcome. For a successful offensive of the armed forces of the Russian Federation, it is necessary to solve the problem with closed digital communications, which I have written about more than once, well, Murs that is. Otherwise, the control of large forces will crumble during an offensive. And again, everything will drown in blood. The enemy will get a huge advantage. And I like this last sentence here. He has connection, in quotes, combat internet from Elon Musk. Has this problem been resolved? No. All this sets me up for not the most optimistic forecasts. If the alleged offensive of the Russian Federation Armed Forces, with unresolved problems, turns into another squeezing out of the enemy, with huge losses and the absence of detours and deep coverage, then an extremely bad option is possible. Our forces will be exhausted in frontal assaults. And the enemy, using this, will then inflict a strong counterattack with fresh breakthrough corps, which he's now building right now. And I'm sorry about the cat, it's the background. I'll just quickly shut him down and then I'll finish this one up. Yeah, sorry about that. It really hurt my headphones, and I hope you didn't hear that much of the scratching. This has been like the fifth take, and yeah, sorry about that one. But well, we'll get stuff better. Translating this stuff isn't really easy. Ugh. Well, now that's it for today. I've been contacted by some interesting people who want to collaborate with me and maybe work together in Ukraine. So that's moving on. But, of course, we're going to keep you updated. In case of whatever, well, if you want to support the show, please consider becoming our patron on patreon.com/theeasternborder. Or just, you know, if you listen to the show via our homepage, theeasternborder.lv, you can just go there. By the way, all the show is always ad-free in that site. And just click the donate button. That would be much appreciated since, well, we use that and we try to spend that money on good equipment and making the best news humanly possible for you. But, yeah. Still, not back on Twitter. I'm on Mastodon, though. If you Google up Eastern Border, you'll find me. But until next time, до свидания, товарищи. And remember, happiness is mandatory.